Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I think we'll get started. For those that don't know me, my name's Angie Hartle and I'm from Mercer, but not very important in this. I'm here to facilitate Melanie. So this session is a new age retirement advice workflow. And I'll introduce Melanie. Melanie Dunn, she's the head of actuarial services at Accurium, where she leads the actuarial consulting and superannuation teams. Her focus is on delivering practical and meaningful training, consulting services and tools to assist professionals and institutions make informed decisions and deliver superior retirement outcomes. She's on lots of parties, so lots of acronyms here, but Melanie's the chair of the SIPC. I've got to read this because there's so many acronyms. SIPC, SMF, SMSF subcommittee. Chair of the SMSF Association TASI Chapter Committee and a member of the SIPC and Retirement Income Working Group. So perfect. We're in perfect hands here. The title is New Age Retirement Advice Workflow. And we spent a lot of time today talking about retirement income solutions. And I think my experience of the trustees that I've worked with are only offering these through advice. So it's going to be interesting to hear Melanie's point of view here about sort of pain points for financial advisors in recommending lifetime income solutions. So I'll hand over to Melanie.
Thanks, Angie. And hello, everyone. What a lovely intimate group for today's discussion, where we are going to do kind of change our hats over from probably the space a lot of us work in with superannuation trustees to think about financial advice. But before we get started, I've got a question for you. Can anyone remember what you were doing on the 11th of May last year, Mother's Day Eve? Well, I hope you are outside looking up, looking south and experiencing an amazing aurora. It was big, it was bright, and these are some photos from my home in Hobart in Tasmania. These were the solar storms of May 2024, the largest geomagnetic storm to hit Earth since March 1989. They produced an aurora that was visible much further north than usual, even here in Sydney, but in Tasmania, it was right overhead. Now, the auroras are elusive. They're hard to predict. A complex range of factors need to come together in just the right way, under just the right circumstances to produce something amazing. And that's what we're going to talk about today, the challenge of retirement advice. Advisors need to take account of their clients' complex factors, their personal circumstances and objectives, and how they combine strategy and product to produce an amazing retirement strategy. And we already heard a lot today about the annuity puzzle, this idea that research consistently shows, including a lifetime product, can improve a client's retirement income outcomes. And indeed, we know that retirement advice is one of the top reasons people seek financial advice. They worry about whether their money will last. They want to know what investments to hold to achieve their objectives in retirement. And yet, as we've seen, the vast majority of pension accounts in Australia are account-based income streams. The take-up of lifetime income streams is very low. So today we'll be working through some work that I've been doing with one of Australia's leading advice tech firms, looking at the barriers to providing financial advice which incorporates a lifetime income stream and how we might go about solving some of those barriers. So if we start with the challenges to providing advice on lifetime income streams, and the first is knowledge. There's just a general lack of awareness and understanding of lifetime income stream products with clients, with advisors, and with licensees. And I think it's fair to say a lot of the heavy lifting in this space at the moment is being done by the product providers, so primarily the life insurers. Investing in research, investing in technical teams, providing CPD days and training to financial advisors. And then we have the product challenges. Tim's session this morning touched on, and Stephen touched on, and some of the other sessions, that since the innovative retirement income stream rules have come out, we've had an explosion of innovation, which is great. And we've got a number of lifetime income stream products in market, but they're all different. They have different products, options and features. And this is all very challenging for advisors to navigate. They have to be able to stand behind what product they select and what features they use in that product as being in the best interest of their client. And the third key challenge is technology. So advice technology, how advisors go about delivering their advice, meeting their compliance and regulatory requirements to recommend a product in the best interest of a client. And that's where we're going to focus today. If I have a client and I'm sitting there and I want to give them advice that includes a lifetime income stream, as an advisor, it's a terribly messy process at the moment. I cannot do it all within my advice technology. I need to go out to product provider websites to find PDSs, pricing. I need to use tools outside of my advice technology to help me through the whole process from strategy to product to modeling to compliance. Where we want to get to is a much more integrated and efficient advice workflow where those barriers that, you know, stop advisors in the process of seeking information and providing recommendations about lifetime income products go away. And in making these changes, you know, a bit of a theme that's come across this conference is aiming for good, not perfect. What changes can we make now that are meaningful in the advice process that will improve things for financial advisors, but which may not be our ultimate objective? What is the meaningful changes we can make today to make the steps more integrated? So today we'll be focusing on four key areas that we identified which we could make adjustments in advice tech to make meaningful improvements for financial advisors. And the first is the retirement planning horizon, kind of a topic core and core to the heart of actuaries in retirement. And it's all about longevity risk. And the fact is advisors don't have a good understanding of longevity risk. As actuaries, we're doing a lot of work in this space. But if you're a financial advisor looking to assess a retirement income strategy, they generally do this over a determined time frame. So they're answering questions like, will my client's money last until age 85? Will my client's money last to life expectancy? As actuaries, we know their decision on that time frame will be highly dependent on the strategies and outcomes that we would recommend. If I'm looking for an optimal strategy over 10 years versus 30 years, I'm probably going to make a different strategic or product decision. And what life expectancy is right? So not only do advisors not know much about life expectancy, when they try and find the right answer, if I Google what's the life expectancy of an Australian retiree, I actually don't get much references that are in relation to retirement. I might find some published media, and a lot of those turn up talking about life expectancy at birth. And we all know that's definitely not the right measure of life expectancy for someone who's 65 and retiring today. When I speak to advisors about life expectancy, there's a few key things I try to make sure they're educated about. The first is looking at the right measure of life expectancy, allowing for mortality improvements. We want to look at the time frame of someone alive today, not someone who passed away years ago at the last census. And I pose the question, what type of people do you have sitting in that room with you for retirement planning? And there was a great session by Faye yesterday starting to look at the socioeconomic trends of mortality in Australia. If you've got a client sitting with you, 300,000, 400,000 plus, reasonable health, they've had a job their whole life, are they the average Australian? Probably not. They're probably already in those higher socioeconomic bands. That means their average is higher than the population average. They already need to plan for longer. And then we start talking about, well, the average is an average. Would your clients be happy with a toss of the coin chance? Or indeed, we know statistically more than half of people will live beyond life expectancy. Are they happy with that risk that the planning horizon is long enough? You can see the light bulb go off in their minds and they go, oh, that's, what do I do instead? How should I be thinking about this? And I really like to focus in on risk-based life expectancies. And to help them understand this variation, I talk about kin. I did check last night that this is still the case. He's Australia's oldest living person at the moment. He turned 111 last year. Working class Australian, he lives in Grafton here in New South Wales. When he retired at 65, do you reckon his financial advisor expected he was going to live for 46 years? So really getting the point that the life expectancy is just one number. There's a very small chance that anyone will live to that exact age. We have to allow for the variance. So how can advice tech help encouraging a long-term focus and thinking about longevity risk? And we focus in on these risk-based concepts. Life expectancy isn't good enough. How can we provide clients with more confidence in their retirement planning horizon? So we talk about things like the 25% age. This is the age beyond which only 25% of people will live beyond, providing 75% confidence we're planning for long enough. If I'm even more risk averse, maybe I'd use the 10% age, 90% confidence I'm planning long enough. And we highlight joint life, so couple life expectancy. The fact that if you're dealing with two people and planning until the last person passes away, that's longer than either of their individual life expectancies. So a starting point we often speak to is this 25% age measure, and that this is the starting point for what we should be thinking about for an advised client in Australia for our retirement planning horizon. So in our advice tech, how can we build in some of this thinking to help advisors set a reasonable time frame for the purpose of planning? First, we can think about sensible defaults and maybe looking at that 25% age as a starting point for the advisor in the advice technology. The second is helping to educate them, because not only do they need to understand the risk involved with the planning horizon they select, they need to be able to explain that to their client and make sure their client buys into the planning horizon over which strategies are going to be tested. The second key factor is product selection. Advisors are placed with product feature overload. I won't go through all these dot points on the left-hand side, but that's an example of the wide range of features and options that you can select today with products in market between different products and within different products. If you're an advisor, you have to be able to stand behind the product you've selected as the best option for your client. If we look at this list and go, whoa, I need to think seriously about how I understand all these things, how can we help advisors navigate all this choice? So again, they understand the product and they can explain why it's in the best interest of their client. Now, at its core, all these lifetime income products are trying to do the same thing, pay an income for life. But how they do it is very different. They have different exposure to risk, different starting payments and patterns of payments over retirement, impact on Social Security, estate planning, and access to capital. All of these things that advisors have to think about as part of their retirement advice. So advice technology could uplift to aid advisors with this decision-making by setting sensible initial product defaults in terms of the product option selections and helping identify to the advisor if any particular products may not be suitable for a client based on what we know about them. So to manage the complexity of these options, there's kind of two things I think we can do. The first is build within our advice tech a simple questionnaire that speaks to the preferences and objectives of a client and uses those to tie back to the features and options available within each product, and use those to set an initial setup for the advisor of the product options that may be best suited to their client. The advisor will need the option to go and change this and modify if they need, but give them a starting point rather than a bit like the situation with members of super funds having, you know, choice overload and not really knowing what to do. The second is integration. Advisors have a hard time with their advice processes, lots of regulation, they're time poor. How can we integrate into the advice technology so they don't have to go and find all of the things they have to look at, the PDS, the starting pricing, the quotes, the information about fees, the estimates of future payments and capital access? Can we have data feeds and integration so that they're at the fingertips in the advice technology? So as an example, we've got, say Mark here is getting some financial advice. He's 67. He's got $650,000 in super and he's invested 60% in growth assets. We've got two hypothetical lifetime products the advisor is thinking about, product A and product B. And these are the options that advisor has within those products that they can pick from. For example, we might have, from a capital access perspective, a benefit for voluntary and death benefits that's subject to the capital access schedule, providing Social Security entitlement, you know, improvements, or they could turn off that capital access for higher starting payments. We might have an option of an account balance where we can choose to invest that in a balanced or a conservative investment mix. Lots of different features and options. So what we thought about was what questions could we ask an advisor that would help link us to set a default to select between available products what options of these the advisor might select as best suited to a client's objectives and current circumstances. For example, is age pension planning a focus for this client? And maybe all of these questions starts as like a not sure, a default until the advisor fills it out. But the system might go, okay, well, I know this client looks like they might be in the age pension band. So to start with, let's pick the options where available that provide the concessional age pension treatment. So let's start with the setup of this product. Product A here had no option. They were all ones that would meet the concessional CAS, but we'd pick the CAS option in product B. So identifying some key questions that we can link rather than saying to the advisor, do you want CAS or not? What does that mean? And some of the key questions fall out around the lifetime income payment pattern. This is the most, you know, one of the most interesting and most flexible parts of the innovative income streams we see today. But on the flip side, it also adds a lot of complexity. We have all of these different types of indexation options we can pick in products available in market. And they can be combined to produce a whole range of expected payment profiles. Like, what's the shape of income we want to target over time? If the worst should happen and we completely run out of all of our other assets, what type of income do we want to be receiving? How do we want this to complement the income from the ABP? So some key questions we identified is, does the client have a preference for lifetime income to keep pace with cost of living? Yes, no, not sure. If we say yes, what level of inflation protection is desired? Do you want it guaranteed? Do you want to know that no matter what, that payment will increase with inflation, it's going to keep pace with the cost of living? Or are you happy for it to kind of target that over time? Or indeed, do you want it to grow more than that? And is your client comfortable with lifetime income that could go up or down? Are you happy if payments go down some years? These three questions can target all of the different sort of payment profiles that we're looking to achieve or potentially looking to achieve in retirement. So for example, our client, our advisor said, yes, I have a preference for lifetime income to keep pace. I'm happy to target that. And I am comfortable with income which can go up or down. These are the profiles that could potentially achieve that type of pattern for the client. I'm sorry, the colours aren't coming through here, but you should be able to look in your packs. Basically, anything that has a rising payment option, a future expectation of growth, and we can use things like these payment boosts to do really interesting things. Like you might have a payment indexation of 6% based on a balanced underlying investment mix. There's some product features where you could instead of having 6% future growth or targeted, you can apply, say, a 3% payment boost where you bring forward that future indexation to a higher starting payment and all your future payment indexations are reduced by 3%. So the expectation around 3% around inflation. So you can do some really interesting things. And when that comes back to the full profile, we have that in there. So for this product A and product B, CPI growth out of the two options available in product A of no indexation or CPI might best target inflation protection. And the balanced option, when we had the option of investment returns or nil, might work for product B. So building a more intuitive way for the advisor to select the options within a product. The third option is portfolio construction. And for me, this is one of the really interesting things where theoretically you go, oh, put 20% in a lifetime income stream. That's easy. In practice, in the advice process, this is actually really hard. So if we're allocating a proportion of a client's investment to a lifetime product, we have to figure out a few things. How much are we investing? What is our view of the risk profile of this lifetime income product? What do I sell to fund my investment in this lifetime income product? And how do I maintain my overall risk profile as I do this? Now, advice technology can help here too. We can help advisors in creating the portfolio that has the lifetime income product in a way that rebalances the portfolio to maintain the risk profile while still allowing advisors to adjust investment options and selections, but warning them about impacts that may not be expected, such as if the risk profile is not maintained. So this concept of risk profile is really interesting because it's something we are kind of stuck with. It may not work as well in retirement as accumulation phase, but it's there. It's built. It's how advisors work. they might be targeting a superannuation risk profile of 50% growth. Now, with an account-based pension, that's easy. I'll pick some managed funds and I'll pick some other investments. I know assets that I believe are growth or defensive and I work it out. With a lifetime income product, what is it? Is it growth? Is it defensive? Is it some mix thereof? There isn't a standard that kind of says what a lifetime income product is. And advisors have different views. We've done work on this with life insurers to help them evidence to advisors that different views still work. So the technology needs to allow for different views. But in general, I'd say there's a general consensus that for traditional products like CPI, indexed annuities, nil indexation annuities, we view them as defensive assets. The new innovative income streams with investment link components, however, are a bit different. Many advisors do view these as having a growth component. There are still some advisors that go, well, that's a guaranteed lifetime income product, though. I'm still going to think of that as a defensive investment. But most advisors are aligning their view of the risk profile as that of the underlying investment profile of any account balance or the indexation of the payments. So if I've got a payment profile where I've selected payments to go up with a balanced investment option or index, then and the PDS tells me that's about 60% growth, I'd probably view that product as an advisor, typically as 60% growth. So how does this all work out? We go back to Mark. He's done his questionnaire with his client. He's got the selection of the product features, but we're still now trying to set up the portfolios we're going to compare so we can make a recommendation, which include these two products. So product A, I'm going to view as a defensive investment. This was CPI indexed. And product B, the advisor thinks, okay, I'll treat that as 60% growth. Next, how much do I want to put in? The advisor says, oh, you know what, let's start with a 20% investment. We'll start by testing that for our products. So we get started. We jump into our advice technology and we create our first profile. Let's start with the base case of an ABP-only strategy. I'm targeting a 60% growth profile. I pick a whole range of, you know, fixed interest shares, property funds, and I invest my money, my $650,000, it achieves that 60% growth profile. My advice technology tells me I've achieved that client's objective. And we've got our base strategy set up in the XYZ platform. Now to work out the other two. What investments do I sell to fund the investment in the lifetime income product? Now, at this point in the advice technology, we don't know any advisor's preference for what they might want to sell. So where do we start? An easy way to start, an initial default approach is possibly to take out the investment in proportion to the existing investment allocation. So I want a 20% allocation, I'll take it out from each of the portfolio. So that remains in the same sort of risk profile. This will have problems though. We'll have a problem here of not maintaining the risk profile if the lifetime product we are investing that money into does not have the same risk profile as the target profile. Further, we will have problems if the allocation to the lifetime income product requires a higher investment of growth or defensive assets than we have available. For example, say a client with a high growth 80-20 profile wants a 30% investment in a CPI-linked annuity. I don't have 30% of my profile in defensive assets. So how can we help the advisor rebalance? So if we look at product B here and the investment, so we have our assets currently in XYZ platform, 100% invested in an ABP. And product B, in this case, is available within XYZ platform. It's an investment in the ABP. And we know that we've got a view of this product as 60% growth. So when we do that initial rebalance to invest the money in product B, we maintain the risk profile. This is why advisors are really liking these investment link products, because it just works if they can pick the right type. What about product B? Product A. This is a product, a CPI link product that we are purchasing from a life insurer. So we go through the same default process in the technology, take out our 20% in proportion to the current assets, plop it into product A. But what's happened? This was a defensive asset and we can see the risk profile at the bottom there. We're out of whack. So we need to display this to the financial advisor and we need to rebalance. We warn them of this mismatch in risk profile and open it up to help them choose to adjust their investments. So they would recognize, okay, I need to take this out of defensive investments. I might leave my growth assets as they were. My trigger's gone. Invested in the same as the account-based pension alone. And I might take my 20% equally from my defensive investments. And now our risk profile is maintained. A really interesting thing that can raise some issues in current advice technology or even in the thought process of advisors is that when I did this, I took the money out of platform XYZ and I gave it to a life insurer. The ABP that's left in XYZ platform is 75% growth. That doesn't equal the 60% that maybe it's expecting as the target profile for the client. So there can be some education needed or upgrades in systems to make sure that's not like disallowed. And the final step is the modelling. How can we help advice tech and advisors themselves use modelling principles that will take account of the client's objectives and the risks that they face? And the Institute's doing some great work in providing information on best practice retirement modelling so that we can analyse all of the trade-offs that we know advisors and their clients face. Some key things to make sure the modelling takes account of is risk, so stochastic modelling. Most advice tools are deterministic. Most advisors will put in a fixed assumption, you know, 8% for my growth returns, but we know all we can say about those returns is we won't achieve 8% each and every year in retirement. And when I speak to advisors about retirement modelling and retirement risks, talking about sequencing risk really helps the light bulb go off when you're talking about retirement and how the volatility of returns over time can impact the outcomes when you're drawing down on your savings. And how stochastic modelling can really help you make informed decisions because you're talking about things like the chance, the probability of achieving outcomes. The importance of age pension entitlements and doing that accurately. And finally, actually allowing for these lifetime income streams. There is no modelling tool in market that allows advisors to compare the range of lifetime income streams. In fact, most of the tools available in advice technology don't even allow you to model specific lifetime income streams. It might have a generic type option, and the power planners and advisors used a whole range of workarounds to model a specific product. You might have to go off to a product provider's website to look accurately at a particular product strategy. Now, deterministic outputs, I think, are still really useful. It's very clear, it's simple, it helps advisors have a conversation about the strategy. But advice technology could be updated to integrate the modelling into the process, avoid double entry, feed through the information and strategy from what we just did into the model. Utilise risk-based modelling to provide informative and engaged outputs, and then feed all this back into the SOA. Let the advisors choose the modelling that they have kind of agreed with, that has supported the evidence for their recommendation, and have that go into the SOA. And as actuaries, I think we can't discount the importance of stochastic modelling, but as we educate advisors about using this type of modelling, be aware of the kind of the risks of using it from our perspective. So we know that risk is uncertainty, and we can educate advisors about the importance of using this modelling. And I find most advisors are really, you know, they get it. When they get it like a half an hour about what this all means, the next question is, awesome, how do I use this? Where do I use it? Because they see the value in being able to answer the questions that, you know, today we've heard, you know, what can I afford to spend? Is my super enough? We can work out the confidence of achieving those objectives. In a deterministic model, all we can say is, it looks like it'll last to that time frame, but we know this actually isn't going to happen. I think for us as an institute, the challenge in this space is, you know, with these stochastic models, it's a bit of a black box for advisors. Rubbish in, rubbish out. And we cannot rely on advisors and licensees to set assumptions to create a stochastic model. So these models need to, you know, use actuaries, use investment actuaries to produce the scenarios that these models will use. And in Australia, we don't have kind of standard frameworks that assess that this model is good for retirement planning or this model is effective. You're trusting the actuaries that you're talking to believe their models. And when I use stochastic models, I really like using real-world models for retirement. You know, models where the starting point of the scenarios reflects current economic conditions and they move to the steady-state equilibrium over a number of years. For me, that is much more reflective of the real life that we're modelling. It aligns the starting assumptions with the starting pricing conditions that are, you know, with the lifetime income products, and it feels a lot more realistic. So I think there's work to be done in educating about stochastic models and how we use them. So let's have a look at Tim and Shelley and how we would integrate some of this thinking into the advice tech process. So they're a retired couple. They're considering two strategies as the advisor, keeping the account-based pension or investing 30% in product C, an investment-linked lifetime product. They've worked through the process. They've got their retirement planning horizon. They've selected the product options suited to the client circumstances, and we've set up our strategy B portfolio. Now we're at the important bit. There is no standard metric for comparing strategies with a lifetime income product. And indeed, I think the only thing actuaries can agree on is it's really complicated, and comprehensive retirement modelling is currently the best practice for how to do this. So the modelling is really important. How can we help an advisor understand the trade-offs between strategy B with a lifetime product and strategy A without? And do this in a way that helps them, come back to the client objectives. A key output for me is to utilize the power of the stochastic modeling and distill it down to something meaningful like a strategy score. And we're already seeing tools have these types of outputs. So what's the likelihood? What's the confidence my client can achieve their target lifestyle for life? For the retirement planning horizon. And here we can see strategy B with the lifetime income product has a 71% chance of achieving their target spend for that retirement planning horizon versus the ABP only strategy of which had a score of 44%, a low confidence. But that's not enough for advisors. They want to understand a bit of the detail. What's the trade-offs going on? So presenting a summary of the differences between the two strategies, not just at our target retirement planning horizon, but what happens if my client dies after a few years? What happens if my client lives longer? And help them understand kind of the implication at those different periods. So presenting to them the outputs around capital access, so the estate value that they get on death from the household, and these are the overall household outcomes, or the withdrawal value. And this is showing a very common kind of pattern you see with strategies that have a lifetime income product where the voluntary capital access, the voluntary withdrawal value of the whole portfolio is generally lower than an account-based only strategy up until kind of life expectancy. So that's one of the trade-offs to think about. But this is a really great way to help advisors know, do I need to care a lot that my portfolio is $20,000 lower after 5 years? Is that really impactful? Because at 29 years, when I think about the retirement planning horizon, my capital access, the estate value that would be payable is actually higher using the lifetime income portfolio. Age pension, always front of mind for advisors, showing the uplift that particularly strategies with the concessional age pension treatment might expect. But with these strategies, often the lifetime income portfolio will have higher age pension entitlements at the start under the assets test, and it will generally decrease over time, actually, if the income test comes into play. So it can start to reverse. So showing these trade-offs. And then how can we use the outputs of the stochastic modelling? You know, how can we dive into that to show advisors the range of outcomes that a client might experience? Not just the middle, not just the average, but what happens in the worst case? In the worst case, we can see here that up to 29 years, both portfolios had pretty similar, both had run out. In the best case, we had a lot more capital available for an estate value after that 29 years. And we can use funnels of doubts and different charts to help communicate the outputs of our stochastic analysis. So advice technology has a huge role to play in removing the barriers to financial advice with a lifetime income product. And integration and usability are absolute key. We can't kind of interrupt the advice workflow and make it harder for advisors. And there's four key aspects we looked at today. So we've looked at how we can bring together the challenging aspects of retirement advice, how we can bring those complex factors together in a way to produce an amazing retirement strategy, just like our amazing Aurora. And I am pleased that the advice tech firm that I'm working with is looking to deliver a really engaging initiative later this year that will help advisors take account of some of these issues in conjunction with industry players to help advisors have meaningful conversations and give advice with lifetime income streams. Thank you.
I'll stand up here because of the microphone. But thank you, Melanie. That was really interesting. And actually, for me, the question that I said at the beginning was kind of a lot of the sort of the big industry funds are looking to use only introducing annuities or retirement income products through advisors. And we've just heard today that advisors might not well be set up to do that yet. So that's quite concerning, I think, really. Just a reminder to pop questions through, please, or feel free to use the mic there. I've had a couple come through already. So I've got here that Jenny from Town, in the first session we had this morning, asked us all to help with the uptake of retirement income products. So what do you think that product providers can do to help advisors with the current challenges in the advice space?
Yeah, like it's really interesting. She made a comment very similar to what I said here, that she's seeing this range of innovation, but it is leading to complexity. And it is absolutely true. And I think because there isn't any standardized way to compare products, there isn't a lot of tools and modeling out there to help advisors compare strategies. The way product providers are differentiating themselves at the moment is to differentiate and to have a different qualitative value proposition and how you talk about the product. And indeed, all of these features can work really well for strategies in different ways, but it does make it incredibly complex for advisors. But I'm not going to stand here and say all lifetime income streams need to be CPI linked with the same investment products, and that sort of thing, because I think, we haven't used these products enough to know the right types of product features and options that we could simplify this complexity to that will work in the best way for financial advice and for clients. So we definitely are on a bit of a journey, but I can see in a future world where we have a lot more take up of lifetime income streams that we may start to reverse this differentiation as we identify what types of products and features do work best when we have the capacity to compare and model them. Kind of strategies against each other and against the ABP-only strategy. So I think we're in a really interesting kind of middle zone at the moment, but it is definitely true that complexity is not helping the process.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Question from the floor. Yeah, do you mind using the mic? Thank you.
Not so much a question, but just a comment. I do some work with a research house that does ratings of financial products. And in the last 3 years, I've done comprehensive ratings of three of these products, the three of the ones that you mentioned up there. And it's interesting that although they all came up really well, because technically they're very well designed, I circled back with one of the providers and 18 months later, so the research reports were written for financial advisors in very plain English to try and explain how the product works and how you might use it and so on, whether it's got any strengths or weaknesses and so on. But one particularly significant operator, after 18 months of solid promotion, had sold 47 of these across hundreds of financial advisors. And they were saying it's just very difficult to get financial advisors to understand the product. And they had put a lot of effort into building online tools, simulation tools. Yep. They'd gone to some effort to try and teach the financial advisors how to use a stochastic modeling tool and so on, and they're just finding it extremely difficult.
That is a reflection of the current way lifetime annuities are sold. It's very BDM driven within the product providers. It's a lot of hand holding for how to use their tools on their websites to do the strategy to help the advisor get that back into X-Plan or Midwinter and in the SOAs. Integration and the seamless processes, I think, is not helping advisors learn and want to use these. I think, wouldn't it be great if the consideration set of strategies for financial advisors always included a lifetime income stream? Doesn't matter if that was the strategy that they went with in the end. To me, that doesn't matter. To me, a really great outcome of improving how we do things for financial advisors is that it's just part of the process to consider a strategy with a lifetime income stream. If that doesn't work out, that's okay. But we are, if we're thinking about strategies in the best interest of our client, there's a whole product class here that many advisors are missing out on. So if we can improve the integration, improve the advice technology, improve the licensee standards so that the starting point is to consider a strategy with a lifetime product and consider a few of those in respect to the ABP, I think advisors are open to that. It's just it's so hard at the moment to do that. There's so many barriers to testing, implementing, identifying, understanding these products. I think there's definitely a huge education piece. As I said at the start, knowledge is a key one. They just don't learn about these products. You know, they were at uni 20 years ago. Even the university courses today probably don't go deep into these products, into longevity risks. So there's a few pillars that still need to be worked on, but technology is a key one.
I think we've got a few more minutes, although the others seem to be going out. I'll just ask you the one last question that I've got here that came through. At the system level, 25% is a conservative setting, but for individuals, 1 in 4 chance of failure is suboptimal. So how do you think about balancing this?
Yeah, so this is in respect to the retirement planning horizon. And this is a funny one because, you know, even to get advisors to buy into life expectancy is a challenge. And to get to tell their client, you're going to live to 90 for a 65-year-old female, you know, they go, oh, but my grandma only survived to 86 and my neighbour died at 83. I'm not going to live that long. So they don't get it. So we need to push the envelope to help them think longer. And certainly lifetime income products, if you had good annuitization within your portfolio, you might even be able to accept less risk on your other income because you've got this layer. But that's all too complicated. We can't get into that with advisors yet. We have to just start getting them to think longer. We have to get them to think. And using that 10% age or something really long, you know, they're going to sit there at this advice technology and go, I don't believe this. I'm not going to use this tool. This doesn't match anywhere near to my current thinking. So we've got to take progress in how we take advisors on this journey. You know, they're not even advising on lifetime income streams at the moment. A fear for me is they use this type of thing and it shows the lifetime income strategies work, which we know they do, but that's very different to what they're actually recommending today. We can't like scare them off in progressing the industry. So I think we really need to balance helping them see the trade-offs, helping them think longer, and take them on this journey. And I know 25%, you know, 1 in 4 might not be enough, but it aligns better with the objective of thinking long term and thinking for retirement. So for me, it would be an amazing step to get all advisors to think even that long as a starting point.
I think we are definitely at time now. So I'll say, if we can all say thank you to Melanie, that was excellent. Thank you.
Thanks so much.